when a profound state of concentration is reached, a joy ensues within oneself, and the mind gets absorbed in this experience of joy. This is a delight which is not merely imagined by the mind, but directly grasped in concrete experience. It is a quite different type of joy from what we are acquainted with in sense contact. The sensation of happiness or pleasure which we experience in contact with objects is utterly different from the positivity of experience that we are speaking of as an emanation of the character of being as such, which is the great ananda which Patanjali speaks as the third stage of experience in meditation. Here, the rootedness of oneself in happiness does not get shaken up by any other experience whatsoever. The winds of the world cannot shake it anymore. Yasmin sthito na dukhena guruna api vichalyate. Not even the worst sorrow can shake a person when one is fixed in this joy that automatically, spontaneously manifests itself from the nature of being itself. The sensations of happiness in the world have to be distinguished from bliss that is divine, because sensations have a beginning and therefore they have an end. Not only that, they are not endowed with any type of positivity in them. They are mere reactions. A reaction is a temporary phase or condition which is roused into experience due to the collocation of various factors involved in that experience. And when those factors get remembered, when they are dissociated, the experience also comes down and vanishes. There is no permanent happiness, therefore, in the world, inasmuch as that happiness is caused by certain conditions. And these conditions cannot always prevail. So, inasmuch as the causative factors are passing, the effect which is joy also is passing. Hence no one is perpetually happy. But here in this condition of sananda experience, the experience attended with joy, which is of a spiritual nature, there is no vanishing of causes and therefore no cessation of the effect. The cause being the essential nature of the object of meditation. And because also of the fact that the essential nature of an object cannot vanish, the conditions may vanish, the form may change, circumstances may vary, but the essential nature cannot change. And inasmuch as one contacts the essential nature of things here, the bliss that emanates therefrom is permanent, because the essential nature is permanent. This experience is ananda, as Patanjali puts it. This ananda is unthinkable, most ecstatic and rapturous in its structure. And it is here that saints burst into songs, dance in ecstasy, and exclaim in a manner which a mortal mind cannot understand, because their visions are supernatural, supersensuous, and supercontactual. This is a stage which is precedent to the total absorption of the essence of the object into one's own being. Wherein, in this condition of absorption, there is an experience of a superior type of comprehensive existence which one enjoys, quite different from the individual existence which one is supposed to enjoy in empirical life, because individual existence is not comprehensive, it is exclusive. Whereas here we are referring to a state of existence which is inclusive. Inclusive of what? Of the object of knowledge. Whereas in individual existence there is an exclusion of the object of knowledge. This is the reason why there is restlessness of mind and intense urge for activity for the purpose of the acquisition of things which are desired or felt as needful. But in this condition, which is referred to as sasmita, there is a feeling of I-ness in respect of the object, not merely in respect of oneself. No one feels a sense of I in respect of another person. We always refer to another as you, he, she, it, etc. Now, here, the object does not anymore remain as a you or a he or a she or a it. It remains as an I. And that is why this condition is designated as asmita. Asmita is self-consciousness. The self-consciousness which is usually the character of individuality, isolated personality, of egoism, is overcome and a new type of I-ness manifests itself in respect of the object of knowledge. That which appeared as something outside the process of knowing, that which was the object that was desired, that towards which the mind moved for the purpose of possessing and enjoying it, becomes a part of the desirer himself. So that the attitude of consciousness in respect to the object here is the same as the attitude that it has towards its own self. Then the movement of the mind ceases, because one cannot move towards one's own self. Even when you look at an object, you will not move towards it, because there is no looking at an object here. There is an insight into the nature of the object. Here, the sensory observation does not anymore work or is felt anymore as necessary. We need not open our eyes and see things or hear through the ears, because the objects of these sensations become commensurate with the structure and substance of our own being with which we have identified the I. The I, or the pure selfhood, which is wrongly limited to the body encasement, is now made to enlarge its gamut and comprehend more things than it could. It is released from the prison of the body. It does not remain inside like a lion tied into the iron bars of imprisonment. It comes out and finds its comrades in the world outside and lives a really friendly life with those forces, persons and things which it originally regarded as enemies, as distinct from its own self. Here is an experience which surpasses human comprehension totally, because with all our imagination we cannot understand what it could be to feel ourselves in another, not merely feel but be another, to exist as another. In this Sasmita condition, one does not merely imagine one's friendship with another or experience ideationally the relationship that one has with other things in the world. It is not a psychological function in the sense of thinking, feeling, willing, etc. It is an absorption. The object anymore is not an object that is sought, but that which is experienced. And this is complete mastery over the object. Just as one has complete mastery over one's own limbs. You can tell your legs to walk in any direction, they will walk in that direction. The legs will not tell you, we will not listen to you. No such fear can be there from the limbs of your own body. There is complete mastery over everything in the world at this stage because of the organic connectedness of all objects with experience. And this experience, as we noted yesterday in studying one of the sutras of Patanjali, is an insight, an experience, an intuition, and not a sensation, a perception, cognition or understanding. In this Sasmita state, the world ceases to be an external atmosphere or an environment that is outside us. It becomes an emanating force of our own personality. We do not live in a world anymore. We live in our own selves. We do not walk on the streets. We enjoy the bliss of our infinity. And the things of the world cease to be things inanimate. The inanimate character of the object ceases. It is not matter that you are looking at, but vital force, energy that is living, as much alive as the living consciousness which is experiencing. This is supposed to be the penultimate condition of total isolation, which is Kaivalya. All these stages are cryptically stated in a single sutra, Patanjali, Vitarka, Vichara, Ananda, Asmita, Anugamat, Samprajnataha. The term Samprajnata is used as an epithet to explain or characterize these experiences, by which what is meant is that there is a peculiar, inexpressible consciousness of a state of being. We can identify this with God consciousness itself. This is what practically amounts to the realization of God, where the feeling of the I is not anymore a mental state, but a character of being, satta. It is not mind thinking an object, but consciousness becoming the object, which is a state of divinity. One cannot ordinarily, in any language, explain or express these states which are supernatural, because they are not objects of any kind of knowledge with which we are acquainted, either perception or inference or verbal testimony or comparison or whatever it be. All these ways of knowing in this world are inapplicable here. In the same way as these processes of knowing are inapplicable in our knowledge of our own selves. I know that I exist not because I perceive myself with the eyes, nor do I infer the existence of myself by logical reasoning. I have a correct grasp of what I am, even if I close all my senses, yet I can know that I am due to a faculty that is working in me, different from seeing, hearing, touching, etc., different from even logical reasoning. And this is what is known as direct intuition. You cannot ask me to prove that I am. It does not require any proof, because all proofs proceed from this experience that I am. The proofs are subsequent to the experience, so they cannot be applied to the experience itself. Likewise, this intuitive grasp of one's being gets extended to all things which are apparently recognized as external in ordinary sensory experience. The condition of a person here is really unthinkable. The person ceases to be person anymore. There is only a faint sensation of one's being and not a concrete experience of a bodily existence of oneself. There is only an impression, as it were, left of one's existence. You begin to feel that your being itself is vanishing. There is a little memory, if you can call it a memory at all, for want of better words, which indicates that you perhaps exist. It cannot be called existence in the ordinary terms, because to us existence is a solid physical existence. Other than physical existence, we know nothing. And by physical existence, we mean bodily existence isolated from the bodily existence of other things. So we are used to diversity of experience. Avidya kama karma, ignorance of the universality of things, desire for external objects and activity towards that, either essential character. But all this vanishes at one stroke. And the peculiar sensation of being that one experiences here is also regarded as a precedent condition to absorption. It is not that we pass through only 6 or 7 stages as mentioned here. There will be infinite minute details which one would be experiencing oneself when one passes through these stages. Just as if you are to go to Badrinath and you ask a tourist officer, what are the things that I will see on the way when I move from Rishikesh to Badri? He will tell you, well, the first thing that you will see would be Devaprayag. Then you will see Vaprayag, Karnaprayag, etc. But he will not tell you what you will see between Rishikesh and Devaprayag. He is not interested in it. But you will see many things between these two. These guides will tell you only the important signposts on the way, but will not tell you the details which you yourself as a pilgrim will see when you actually pass through the road. Because every step, though a little step it be, is a distinctive experience. At every pace you will have a new type of experience. It is not that there are only 8 types of meditation, etc. There may be infinite stages for the person who actually experiences them. And every minute will look like a new world opened before one's eyes. And every experience may look startling. Though sometimes there are indications that a type of experience will ensue. There are premonitions of what will come in front of us, but always this is not the case. There can be a sudden burst, like a whirlwind that blows, without your knowing one day earlier that it will take place subsequently. The experiences vary from person to person, according to the various types of karma which one is passing through experiencing. We cannot generalize experiences for all persons in the world. But one thing can be said in a general manner, that experiences are mostly startling. They are not experienced gradually with previous notice. You will find that all great things in the world happen suddenly. Whether it is a sudden promotion or a sudden earthquake, it can be anything. You will not know it one day before. You will get a notice that such a thing has happened. Or it may be birth, or it may be death. Even these cannot be known a day earlier. Likewise, these revelations from the bosom of nature, which are the experiences in meditation, will suddenly come like surprises, shaking the very foundation of our earlier thoughts and ways of thinking. And every new experience will be a new world that we enter into, and not merely a way of thinking or a refashioning of the way of living. Infinite worlds are there, say the scriptures. It is not that we have only 14 worlds, as the Purana sometimes tell us. The 14 worlds are like the so many chattis that you find on the way to Bagri. But I told you, they are not the only things that we have to pass through. There are many other things, smaller ones. So likewise, though tentatively for gross classification we may say there are 14 worlds or 14 realms, etc., etc., the experiences will be much more, and every minute will be a new world for the advanced yogin. And then, what happens? The sensations of the presence of things outside, leave alone the desire for things, gradually get transmuted into the direct awareness of their being part and parcel of one's own self. The Yoga Vasishtha has a detailed essay on these stages of knowledge. The four stages of knowledge, as Patanjali also mentions in his own language, where in the beginning, the earlier or earliest one, we are supposed to have only a flash, like a lightning. It is not like a brilliant sun that is perpetually hanging in front of us, but a flash which comes and goes. This is referred to as sattvapati, the manifestation of sattva in us, in its uncontaminated purity. This is what the Yoga Vasishtha tells us. We have flashes. Sometimes they can be daily flashes. It does not mean that these flashes will come every minute. They may come every day or they may come after 1 year. So many complain that they had some experience of a light, etc., and they are not recurred. Well, as I mentioned to you, we cannot generalize the rules of the way in which these experiences manifest themselves. Sometimes they will not be there for years together. Sometimes they can recur again and again, as the case may be. The flashes can become frequent as time passes. And inasmuch as these flashes are nothing but the sudden spurts of the light of consciousness itself, and not merely the light that comes from an external source like that of the sun or the moon, every flash will shake the whole personality. It will rebuild every part of your body and mind, so that there will be an experience of strength, confidence, and happiness, all coming together at once. You look that there is nothing impossible for you. Though you may not be doing anything, you will have a feeling that nothing is impossible. Because the difficulty in achieving anything arises on account of the isolation of the objects from the process of knowing. When the process of knowing has become one with the object in substance, you have no doubts as to the possibility of achievement, even as you have no doubts as to whether you will be able to lift your hand. You know that you can lift the hand if you want. All doubts cease forever, because you become a master in the real sense of the term. Not a master as a boss is in an office, but a master due to the identity of being established between the knower and the known. Here, the Yoga Vasishtha tells us, one experiences asamsakti, a total detachment from all externality of sensation. You will not even perceive externality at this stage. Inasmuch as objects in the world appear to be hanging on your own body as it were, you to look that the huge structures which constitute this cosmos, maybe even the planets and the solar system, are hanging on your own body, and you will be wondering what has happened to you. There are stages where one gets puzzled and perplexed and needs direct guidance from competent masters. One can be startled so vehemently that it may be difficult to experience that stage and to predict what one would do at that stage. Lastly, the Yoga Vasishtha points out, there will be padartha abhavana, non-perception of the materiality of things. What you call matter will look spirit. Walls will begin to shine like transcendent, transparent crystal. Opaque objects will cease to be opaque anymore. They become translucent. And the light of knowledge will pierce through any object. And this so, because they are not any more objects. The objects which looked impervious and impregnable becomes transparent and allow the passing in of any light, because they have become part of the knowing process. The object of knowledge has become knowledge itself. Or rather, the other way around, you may say, knowledge has become the object. Jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam hrati sarvasya vishtitam, says the Bhagavad Gita. That which is situated in your heart as the light of consciousness is the knowledge which knows objects, and it is also the objects that are known by that knowledge. Here, therefore, the materiality of things does not arise. There is no matter anymore, there is only spirit. It was spirit that appeared as matter when the senses projected themselves outwardly and transmuted spirit into matter. When there is an externalization of spirit, it looks like matter. And when there is a universalization of matter, it looks like spirit. So one and the same thing appears as two things. But when this condition is reached in deep meditation, materiality gets transformed into spirituality. This is called padarthabhavana. Or sometimes it is pronounced as padarthabhavana, where padartha is nothing but the ultimate substance, which is the reality, the absolute, directly cognized in experience. So all the scriptures point to the same stages of experience and the same passage through which one has to pass. as we are concerned more here with Patanjali, we shall restrict ourselves to what he says as regards the aims of life which are gradually realized by the methods he prescribes. He points out that a sensation remains of being. That is all. Nothing else will remain there. You will not see the world. You will not see persons and things. But you will only feel that you exist. But you may ask me, even now I am feeling that I am existing. What is the difference? All the difference. It being in the content of the sensation of being. While the content of individual being is body. And anything that is restricted to the body alone. And bodily relation. And while this sensation of physical being individually is automatically bifurcated from the physical existences of other things known as objects, due to which there is desire, action, etc. In this pure sense of being we are referring to in yoga, there is no objectivity in consciousness. Because all that was to be the content of consciousness has got merged into consciousness in its menstruum. So this sensation of being, virama pratyaya abhyasa purvaha sanskara sheshaha anya, is a sutra which points out that there is a stage of experience where meditation practically ceases. No effort is there anymore. There is no activity of the mind even in the slightest degree. There is only a subsidence of all activity, a cessation of movement, and a delight that surpasses knowledge on account of the satisfaction, the conviction that everything that was expected, everything that was needed, everything that was desired has become one's own self. This experience is what is indicated in the sutra. Virama pratyaya abhyasa purvaha samskara shesha anya. Samskara shesha is the name of this experience. Which means to say there is only a slight trace of the impression of one's being. Not the being of the body or the individuality or the local personality. But the being of all things grouped together in a blend of experience. This again, as I mentioned, is God consciousness. Well, blessed are those who can even think of these things, let alone experience. And as in one place the great Madhusudana Saraswati points out in his exposition of the Bhagavad Gita, even a moment's thought along these lines, we are not talking of actual realization. Even a moment's contemplation of these ideas will burn up all the sins of past lives. And this, he says, is equal to all pilgrimages conceivable. And all charities that you can think of, and any good deed in this world is not equal to a fraction of this deep contemplation, says Madhusudana Saraswati. Hari Om Tat Sat.